About 10 years ago now, when I was fresh out of seminary and I had just arrived at First Unitarian with my crisp new Master of Divinity degree and two internships checked off, and I learned of the existence of a puppet theater in the sanctuary, that was the very first time of many times that I would think, they didn't cover this at Harvard. How I have grown to love Carl, Rebecca, and Sheldon, and Olivia the Owl, and Ralph Waldo Raven, and Lucia the Leopard. They are continuously learning. Sometimes they learn the same things repeatedly. I can relate to that. I'll bet you can too. And Carl reminds me of some wise words I once heard. Whether or not you believe God exists, it's important to remember that you are not God. Whether or not you believe God exists, it's important to remember that you are not God. Humans are certainly made of stardust. And some say we contain the breath or the spark of the divine, a way of describing our aliveness and the inherent worth and dignity that are the birthright of every human. I say that. And at the same time, it's also true that whether or not you believe God exists, it's important to remember that you are not God. What that means is that we do not know everything. It's about spiritual humility. It's important to remember that we do not know everything. That truly is one of the central tenets, a cornerstone of this church and of our denomination, Unitarian Universalism. We have a somewhat unusual expression of religion, or to put it in plain language, this is kind of a weird place. What I mean is that we're technically a Protestant church, but we do not identify as a Christian church. Not many churches would say that they're Protestant, but not Christian. There are Christians among us. There are certainly many Christian Unitarian Universalists, and we have a monthly Christian communion service. But we also have Buddhist groups, a Seder service organized in part by members who identify as Unitarian Universalist and as Jewish, and of course a pagan group that gathers regularly for ritual and friendship. I have met Unitarian Universalists who identify also as Hindu, some who draw inspiration from the Tao Te Ching, including our senior minister emerita, who wrote the Twitter Tao, a book of tweet-sized lessons from the Tao. And there are UUs of many spiritual stripes. Our Sunday services are Protestant in their timing and in their structure. We've got opening words, hymns, prayers, sermon, but they also include meditation, and they often have rituals, readings, or sources that reflect diverse influences. And today we sang a Sufi song in Arabic. And we hold these services in the embrace, literally, of religious diversity. Behind this pulpit, no matter what our theme is for the day, there is the centerpiece of this sanctuary, larger than the minister, larger than the pulpit, larger than anything else in this room, a mural of symbols from the world's religions that curves inward as though to hold us. And in the candle corner in the back, where you're invited to light candles of personal prayer, we see ourselves and this sanctuary, including the mural, reflected in the cosmos, which is painted on the glass panels that define that little candle corner, the work of an artist in our congregation. And right now, in the nichos above us, we have a tribute to science, which we claim fearlessly as an important teacher in this church, even and especially when it might challenge our thinking. When somebody I've just met somewhere out in the world asks me what our church believes, and I say that we don't have a creed, they're usually really surprised, even a little incredulous. And they want to know, how does that work? What even makes it a church? And what are the sermons about? And do you call them sermons? And then they wonder also, is this church new? Is it some kind of a new church? Well, no. Actually, we go way back. Unitarian and Universalist churches in the U.S. in the 1700s and 1800s were Protestant Christian churches. They used to be two separate traditions, Unitarians and Universalists, but both were Christian. In this way, Unitarian Universalism traces its roots all the way back through the Protestant Reformation, through the story of Jesus, through Abraham and Moses, all the way back to the first stirrings of that ancient human question, what does this mean? That question, after all, is the root of all religion. What does this mean? What does it mean to be alive, to be conscious? What are we? How shall we live? What does this mean? A few historical influences or events inspired Unitarians and Universalists of the past, and they set us on a trajectory to radically embrace theological diversity the way we do today. They set us on track to become a religion which names as its third source wisdom from the world's religions, which inspires us in our ethical and spiritual life. Now, one influence was baked into Universalist theology. Universalism, by the way, basically means that everybody is saved. Nobody is damned for eternity. Early Universalist arguments, which were by default Christian arguments, went something like this. If, as it is written in Genesis, Adam and Eve were the first people, and all the people of the earth came from them, and if, as Christian doctrine teaches, they sinned and it was handed down to everyone on earth who are their descendants, and if, as Christian doctrine teaches, Jesus' death on the cross was an action of setting things right between God and humans in response to Adam and Eve's sin, then it follows it must have set things right for all people everywhere, because all people descend from Adam and Eve. Therefore, everyone is saved, not just those who call themselves Christians. Got it? They started with the Christian teachings and they applied logic, and that led them to believe that whatever one's beliefs, everybody was good with God in the end. Universalists also made the case that if God is all-powerful and all-good, then there cannot be such a thing as damnation. A good God would not revel in the idea of eternal suffering, and an all-powerful God who was all-good would not allow it to happen. By arguing that everybody, and not just Christians, were saved, Universalists were already moving toward religious diversity, although at least for a little while longer, most of them would believe that this theory of universal salvation was to be found in the Bible, and that the Bible was the inerrant word of God. Meanwhile, Unitarian theologians were making some bold claims of their own. They were greatly influenced by the Enlightenment that was sweeping the Western world, bringing with it a fearless, if ultimately overconfident, commitment to reason and science. I say overconfident because we know that science, even when the method is sound, is only as good as its questions, and questions often reflect the biases of the questioner. But the Enlightenment is where science began to take a big role in shaping human communities. The Unitarians were also influenced by a new, 200 years ago new, school of thought coming out of Germany, biblical criticism, which examined biblical texts as if they were historical texts. The Bible contains many kinds of texts within it. In fact, the name for the Bible in Greek, ta biblia, means the books, plural. Biblical criticism asked, if these texts were written by humans, what genre are they? Scholars eventually found that biblical texts aligned with several other genres of the time, and genres dating back to long before that time. The creation story in Genesis echoes other creation stories from the ancient Near East. The book known as the Song of Songs is clearly influenced by an ancient Egyptian genre of literature that celebrated adolescent romance. The Wild and Woolly Book of Revelations is also of a genre, and similar examples can be found outside of the Bible in other contexts. Seeing this approach to the scriptures, one of the most famous and at the time notorious Unitarian ministers of the 1800s, Theodore Parker, argued that Christianity doesn't have a special claim to revelation. Biblical criticism also asked what those texts say for themselves rather than what we just say about them. And Parker noted that the Bible does not contain within it any claims to infallibility or claims to be the inerrant word of God. He also argued that there's a difference between the religion of Jesus and the religion about Jesus. In a sermon he preached in 1841 called The Transient and Permanent in Christianity, Parker said that although the teachings handed down from Jesus were true, it was, quote, hard to see why the great truths of Christianity rest on the personal authority of Jesus more than the axioms of geometry rest on the personal authority of Euclid or Archimedes. You can really hear the Enlightenment influence in here, right? It was a provocative thing to say. And he said if somebody were to prove that Jesus never existed, even then, he said, Christianity would still exist because at its heart, it's inherently true. It's hard for us listening today to reconcile this kind of statement with the other Christianities we know in this world. And indeed, even though Parker went on at length to make his case, sermons were often an hour long back in this time, it was hard for Parker's contemporaries to understand, too. His fellow Unitarian clergy stopped exchanging pulpits with him, a real shun because pulpit exchanges were quite normal back then. And soon the Boston Association of Ministers voted him completely out of fellowship with them. Well, the best revenge is to live well. Parker kept preaching, and soon he was attracting crowds of 2,000 to his services. He also kept a gun in his desk to fight off any authorities who might come searching for fugitive slaves. This was the 1840s. Parker was known to harbor people. When I went through divinity school, his sermon and many others from that era were required reading for new ministers. Much happened in that time and over the generations, and I'm just giving you a few snapshots here because you and I would both rather I don't preach an hour-long sermon this morning. But here's one more piece I want to share. That era was also the era of the Transcendentalist movement, led by notable Unitarians such as Margaret Fuller and Ralph Waldo Emerson. Hence the little friend I mentioned earlier, Ralph Waldo Raven. Right. Transcendentalists believed that God was present in all of nature and in all of humanity, and they were interested in the study of world religions. They published translations of and commentary on non-Christian religious texts. More and more, both the Unitarian and Universalist traditions began to embrace theological diversity. Both struggled to define their traditions with statements of belief. Specific beliefs or creeds just became less and less important. And what mattered most was values of love, compassion, justice, and service. The two denominations came together in the 1960s, and that's why we have the long name Unitarian Universalist, and that's why we shorten it to UU. The late UU minister and writer Forrest Church, who led All Souls Church in New York City, imagined a metaphor for humankind's search for ultimacy, a metaphor about humankind's search for the answer to that ancient question, what does this mean? It's a metaphor that will be familiar to many of you. He invited readers to imagine a vast cathedral. See if you can picture one in your mind. He invited readers to imagine a vast cathedral that is as ancient as humankind. If you were to spend your entire lifetime exploring it, he says, you would not be able to find all of its limits. He wrote, the builders have worked from time immemorial, destroying and creating, confounding and perfecting, tearing down and raising up arches in this cathedral, buttresses and chapels, organs and theaters, chancels and transepts, gargoyles, idols, and icons. Not a moment passes without work being begun that shall not be finished in the lifetime of the architects who planned it, the patrons who paid for it, the builders who construct it, or the expectant worshipers. Throughout human history, one generation after another has labored lovingly, sometimes fearfully, crafting memorials and consecrating shrines. Untold numbers of these collect dust in long undisturbed chambers. Others, cast centuries ago from their once respected places, lie shattered in shards or ground into powder on the cathedral floor. This, he says, is the cathedral of the world. Most striking of all are the windows, countless windows, some covered in grime from age and neglect, some dark or abstract, and some representational. Others sparkle with bright colors, and each window tells a story about the creation of the world, the meaning of history, the purpose of this life, the nature of humankind, and the mystery of death. The windows of the cathedral are where the light shines through. Church, Forest Church, said that a 21st century theology of many windows, one light, honors many different religious approaches, and it only excludes the truth claims of fundamentalists. That's because fundamentalists claim that the light shines through their window only. There's no light in any other windows, they say. In this metaphor, I imagine a window not only for theologies, but for atheism too. Atheism tells a different story, one in which the light might simply be the mystery, the spark of life, or that which draws humankind toward reflection and awe again and again. It represents reason, wonder, and holy curiosity. I like to think of the squares in the mural behind me with their symbols of the world's religions as being like those windows right here in our sanctuary. Over the generations, UU faith has grown beyond theology in its commitment to radical inclusion. And today that commitment extends to diversities of people. Our denomination not only welcomes, but it also marries and ordains lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, intersex, and queer people. As a denomination that is and has been historically majority white, we are in a time of intentionally decentering whiteness, from the way hiring is done and policies are implemented, to the sources and the voices included in worship services and how they are included, to the way also white UUs show up as activists for dismantling racism in themselves and in the wider culture. We're committed to welcoming people of all ages and abilities, too, and we are continuously learning how to do these things better. Saying yes again and again to that learning is part of the practice of spiritual humility. We are not God. We do not know everything. One thing I do know, though, is that the work of radical inclusion and embracing diversity is some of the most important work of our time. It is the year 2020 now, a time when those who believe in the inherent worth and dignity of every person and who see that all people and all beings are interdependent look around and ask once more, what does this mean? What does it mean, this meanness of the larger culture around us, which sometimes threatens to seep into us, and we would react with meanness toward that which threatens what we love? In this time, we're led both inward by our faith and outward. We are called to honor out loud the light of the divine within ourselves and each other, and to live the weird, wonderful, Unitarian Universalist message of radical welcome and the fearless embrace of diversity. It's good to be together. Shall we sing our closing hymn?